Not live and coming to you from the fabulous Sunset Strip in Hollywood, California. It's the Bob Dean Show.
Yay!
Yay. Welcome, everybody. Welcome back for episode 57.
Yay!
On iHeartRadio now. Yay. Yeah, iTunes, Stitcher. Thank you very much. Stitcher. And of course, you can watch on YouTube. Thanks to Joe White. Joe and Sammy are here today. I want to shout out to Zach Herndon in Bloomington, Indiana. Hey, Zach. Because he is the coordinator of, he's part of the team here for the Bob Dean Show.
Yeah.
And he sets up everything on my website, bobthesurlycomic.com. I got no shows coming up. I have Shel Talmay and J.D. Hinton, along with the lovely Kathy St. George, my whenever I can get her to come to Hollywood co-hostess. And we're going to get to Shel and J.D. in just a minute because they have been on before and they are friggin' awesome. And let's see what's going on around that I need to point to do. I don't think really anything. I did the Laugh Factory and I did Flappers in Burbank and I nailed
it. Tell me about Flappers.
It was a small crowd, but it was the Yoo-Hoo Room, but I nailed it. It was a great show. Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so I'm working on getting myself out there to do more shows coming up through this, you know, holiday season, that sort of thing. And I'm all flabbergasted because I left my damn notebook at home when I dropped my blazer, and then I picked my blazer up and left my satchel down. And
so here's the question: did you leave it outside the front door, or it's still?
That's what I was pounding my head while we were sitting. Thinking, I'm a screamer in traffic, and I was like, "Mother, what did I do with that?" You know. Anyway, so that you know, we're going to waste any more time on that. So welcome, Shel and JD, again back to the Bob Dean Show. Yay.
Yay!
I'm proud and happy to have you. How have you guys both been?
Good.
I've been good.
Yeah, me too.
Good. Well, you both look well. Kathy, you look fabulous as always. Yeah. I know I look good because that's just the way it is.
Beautiful.
I start with a root canal on Friday, which leads into another root canal, and then some other part about some things being built here and there. So my choppers should be. That's my exciting news coming up.
Me too.
You guys are just so cool. You popped that we met by you guys dropping into my bar where I work at Wolfgang's Steakhouse by Wolfgang's Wiener in Beverly Hills. And we've become fast friends. And we did a show, what, it was just about a year ago, right?
I think we did like the 12th or 13th show that you had done.
Yeah, yeah. You guys were one of my pioneer episodes. Thank you. That's when we recorded at the LA School of Comedy, 10835 Santa Monica Boulevard. Sunita Kern Quist being the owner. It's a great, great place to get started. And that's where the Bob Dean Show started.
Yay.
Yay. Whenever we say, by the way, Shel, we've incorporated something. Whenever we say, did they tell you?
Yeah,
but it's like, but very unenthusiastically, like, yay, because we know that's all how we feel. How is Jan, your lovely wife?
She's great. Thank you.
She's great. Excellent. Now, where about in Los Angeles? You told me where you live.
Studio City.
Studio City. Is that, what's the part of the Echo, not Echo Park? Silver, what's that?
San Fernando Valley. Yeah.
I know, but no, there's a neighborhood that's near you that I want some friends, my friends Sean and his lovely wife that I want to introduce you at some point.
Sherman Oaks, Burbank, Van Nuys.
It's where? Oh my God, you're gonna, you know, we're not gonna waste a lot of time. It's like not Echo Park. It's something
like
Park,
Valley or, Village, or something.
Valley
like
Village, maybe. It's a great area.
Toluca Lake.
Oh,
thank you. They live in Toluca Lake.
Ladies and gentlemen,
Mo Howard lived catty corner to them. His the house that he originally built, and
Bob Hope lived there too.
Yeah, and they have a lovely home. But I just thought, for you know, we need to get together sometime for cocktails down that way.
I do.
So
I get extra credit for having the answer.
Yep, you sure do. Yeah, well, that means you get an extra drink at the
fabulous
bar where I work. And, of course, I'll pay for that drink.
That's right.
Thanks, JD.
You laugh now.
Well, you bail me out of a lot of stuff at that bar, too. You know, getting sticking my foot in my mouth. So, JD, we're talking about you are going to do your Songs of the Night tour October 20th at the Rockwood Music Hall in Manhattan, the Big Apple, New York City. Tell us about that, please, sir.
We're going to be down at the Lower East Side. There's a place called the Rockwood Music Hall. And a few years ago, I was over in New York to look at some things, and I wanted to find a place to play, and I talked to some people about that. And this was one of the names that came up on the list. And so this year, a booking agent said, "Oh, you want to play New York?" Yeah. He said, "Well, how's Rockwell?" Rockwood. And I went, "Oh, it's great." So we set it up. It's October 20. It's a Saturday night. We go on at 7 o'clock. And first time for me to perform in New York, and I'm going back with my piano player and my percussionist, and we're going to go.
Tell us about your piano player and your percussionist names, because they are great guys.
Rick Solom has been with me. We've been writing songs together for quite a while and working on stuff all that time. So since probably for about 20 years. And he's a New Orleans-style R&B kind of piano player. And
he's friggin' awesome, too.
He has a pretty wild... he can make that keyboard talk. Mm-hmm. That's all I know how to say that.
So. The first time I saw you guys perform at Vitello's, I was in a front row seat. Thank you very much. A front row table. But I had the perfect shot of the damn keyboard.
Yeah.
And I was mesmerized through that whole show of watching him tickle the ivories, per se. It was just like magic. It really, really was. It was so neat.
He moves, and you just can't imagine all that's happening out of, you know, one piano and one person. So that's really great. And Ryan's been with us for about a little over a year now on percussion, and extraordinary guy. And he's the fellow that knew New York and said, we should play New York. So we're going to go back and do that.
Well, I know you're excited. And I also know, because I'm part of your fan club and groupie following, and I say that proudly, because you have a hell of a following here in Los Angeles.
Very fortunate.
Yeah. And you've got a lot of people that are making the trip to New York to see you.
There's about 10 to 12 people. I haven't looked at it to really count it like that, but there's 10 or 12 people that are flying back from Los Angeles to New York to see the show in New York.
That's awesome.
It's pretty
That's
amazing.
That's awesome, man. It really is. I know you're thrilled about that.
I am.
I wish I could be there, too. I was supposed to have left for New York. I was supposed to be in New York for a wedding today, and because of this fucking dental work, I couldn't do it, but I wish I could be there to see your show.
Well, if you'd been there, we'd have made fun of you from the stage. So it would have been good. We're going to miss all of that.
Where is this place again?
This we're talking right now in New York. It's called the Rockwood. Uh-huh. Yeah, Rockwood Music Hall. We're on stage 3 in the Rockwood Music Hall. And that's in the Lower East Side around, I think, Allen and Orchard Streets.
I have an apartment in
the
Lower East Side.
So that's where we're going to be. And then we're going to bounce from there back to Los Angeles to the Rockwell.
I'll be going to that.
So we're going coast to coast from the Rockwood to the Rockwell.
On November 4th.
On November 4th here in Los Angeles, Rockwell, table and stage in the Los Feliz area on Vermont by Hollywood Boulevard. So
have tickets been up on sale yet?
Tickets are on sale. You can, if you can find them, probably there's websites for both of those venues, and you can certainly go on my website at jdhinton.com, and there's a way to get tickets there.
Is that a dinner venue, or is it just
They're both supper club kind of venues, yeah. And I don't know that Rockwood is, but I know that Rockwell is absolutely.
Well, we'll have to get our, unless you got a date, we'll book it.
And we're about 10 tickets from selling out in New York, and we're about half sold out already in LA. So it's really that's one of the things I'm grateful for. The people that come to the shows is that they've been really responsive, and the second they know we're going to play, they all know then we better get tickets now, and they do, and it's great.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry.
And it's also you know you're going to have a crowd.
And the songs are
he and Ben are right. Great. I love them.
Shell can probably tell you because he's the song guy that he is, but the songs are songwriter songs. They're lyric-driven songs.
Absolutely.
So.
Well, I was just going to say that the first time that I came to see you at Vitello's, Shell and Jen were sitting up at this fabulous table, like in a bank, what do you call it? Balcony, not a balcony, but when you're looking down.
Yeah.
And
the VIP seats.
Yeah, the VIP, right. And of course, before the show started, I was like, and I had only had like one, maybe one and a half cocktails. But I was walking up, and right as I was approaching them with my hand extended, I didn't realize that there was a step.
Boom.
And boom. I flew about 4 feet through the air and caught myself, thank God. And I was like, what a first impressions always matter.
You're like
it works for Chevy Chase.
A version of that Maxell ad where the guy's cocktail is blowing backwards by the sound. You're falling forwards, and everything in front of you is liquid moving.
Well, Shell.
Yes, sir.
You know, I hope you don't mind that we talk about some of the things we talked about last time about your fascinating career, your past, your influence on so much friggin' awesome rock and roll. And I did ask, I remember it with the last time you were here on the Bob Dean Show. Yay. That I asked about what kind of cars you had when you lived in London, and you were just a young lad but so successful. And I want to get into, I want you to tell the audience again.
What kind of cars he had?
Well, there's a picture of you standing in front of your white Rolls Royce. It's used. I looked at it. I was looking at stuff today, and I clicked on it, and it had images of you, and they're all of when you were very young, and you're very handsome now, but very, you know, young, British.
Flash, I think is what you're looking
But you're standing in front of that white Rolls, and you got, you know, and you're like, you know, and it's really, it's a freaking awesome shot.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That was fun.
You, grew up in Chicago.
I did.
Moved to L.A. at what age?
About 15 and a half.
15, because you went to Fairfax High and graduated in 1955.
Correct.
Wow.
Now, we at Fairfax High, you went to school with the likes of Herb Alpert and Phil Spector, right?
Yes, and Jerry Lieber and all kinds of people.
Wow.
Jerry Lieber, you had a pretty tight relationship with then, right? Or going into music.
He was actually older than me, but I got to know him well after school. And
right.
Spector, we really don't talk about, do we?
he did some wonderful music. So.
Well, I know, but I remember it being made mention with the people that we were talking that he actually, it's the Wall of Sound gets credit from some other people as well.
Well, the two guys at Gold Star who did the engineering, really, they're the ones that did it.
It was their sound. Yeah, and,
absolutely.
Well, interesting. Well, Herb Alpert's daughter, Eden, Herb Alpert's daughter, Alpert. Herb Alpert's lovely daughter, Eden, is going to be a guest on the Bob Dean Show.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, in November. Yeah, she's a doll. And what is the name of her restaurant/club?
Vibrato.
Vibrato on the top of Beverly Glen. Yeah, that's a neat spot.
It is great.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. Maybe I can tell her how when my mother put on that Herb Alpert and the Tijuana Brass album, their party started to pop. And the martinis were flowing and the women cha-chaing and smoking cigarettes.
And Lonnie Hall, too. I love it, too.
Yeah.
Now, what was your inclination or your reason to move to London? You started off in the business.
Actually, my inclination was not to move to London. I was working here as a recording engineer, and the original Conway Studios, which is pretty famous, and the owner was English, and he kept telling me how wonderful England was. I was like 22. I thought it'd be nice if I went to go see some of England and Europe before life passed me by, so I headed off supposedly for 5 weeks.
Wow.
And my friend Nick Vinay, who was a A&R guy at Capitol, I told him I was going. I said, geez, I'd really like to work a couple of weeks there because I didn't have a whole lot of money. He said, hey, take my demos and my acetates, and if you can use them, tell them you did them. I said, okay, that's cool. And I managed by when I got there that somebody made an appointment for me with Decca Records, and I walked in, and being incredibly brash, along with the fact that I didn't care because I was going back to L.A., I said something to the effect of, I'm probably the greatest thing since sliced bread invented as a producer, and here's what I just did, and I gave him two of Nick's acetates, which happened to be Lou Rawls and the Beach Boys.
Oh, my.
And they said, you start today. So, and by the time they found out it was all a bunch of garbage, I already had a hit. So I stayed for 17 years.
I did the same
Bravo.
Thing.
Bravo. Welcome to showbiz.
Yeah.
You did the same thing, you say?
That's how I got in Playboy. I said I was a makeup artist for photography, but I'd never done photography makeup in my life. And they hired me 2 days later, and I ran out and bought all the stuff the girl used on my face. And I worked with him for 22 years.
Wow. You sly dog. See, you guys had cojones to take the – I'm sure I've had opportunities in my life to just jump on that, but I'd be like, I don't want to get in trouble. Well, kudos to you both.
Yeah.
So 63 – you know who we lost recently, if you hadn't heard, was Russ Reagan.
Yes, I know that.
Did you know Russ passed?
I knew him very well. Yeah,
yeah, I know you did. But of course you heard that he passed. But, yes. You know, his relationship with the Beach Boys was pretty interesting, too. Right. And his wife and son, Cheryl and Daniel, have a documentary coming out about him that I'm really, really excited to see. That they were working on with Russ for, you know, some time before he passed. So But he was a heck of a guy.
Actually, yeah. Well, Nick Vinaeus, who did their first record, which is Surfing Safari, is the one I played.
Was that their first?
Yeah.
I love the Beach Boys.
I did. Yeah, I did too. I was in one of their videos once.
Really?
Yeah.
What were you doing? Were you in Kokomo?
I was on the beach running in my bikini.
I'm looking that up.
What I do best.
I was saying before, when I get on YouTube and to look up one thing and 6 hours later and bloodshot eyes and half a pack of cigarettes later. Well, I'm going to look for you. But the one that always sticks in my mind was seeing Gary Lewis and the Playboys. His video for This Diamond Ring, it was obviously very low budget, and it was filmed at Marina Del Rey on a sailboat, and it was a very overcast LA day. But Terry Garr, who I've always loved, she and these two other gals are up there doing the 60s, in the bikini. Yeah, yeah.
Hullabaloo.
So what do you think, Shell, what is your perspective of like British invasion then and now?
Well, does it exist now? I'm not sure it does.
Well, I mean, it's...
I see.
Musical...
What's the impression of it now, looking back on it? Okay. I got there at the perfect time. I moved into a flat right near King's Road, and which was kind of the hub where all that happened. And there was seriously about 400 of us that if there was a party, we all appeared at the party.
No.
And all of a sudden, the whole damn thing exploded. Records and movies and fashion and everything. Yeah. Nancy Quant was there. Was it Nancy Quant? Yes.
Mary Quant,
sorry. Right. And Michael Caine was there, and a whole bunch of people were that.
We're
on the street. So,
what was Carnaby Street all about? See, I live by my oldest sister Deb, who we lost some years ago, was a young teen and into and the Beatles were her absolute favorite,
right,
along with the Kinks and the Who. So there was a lot of that I remember of going on in the house, kind of thing. But what was Carnaby Street all about? Was that fashion?
It was strictly fashion, and I mean, it appealed to a certain kind of person who wanted that kind of fashion. And there were several shops that were selling those kind of clothes. It didn't really appeal to me, but it was, mods and rockers and all that kind of stuff that you've heard about.
And Twiggy and Gene Shrimpton and all the models and the heavy, like...
The big pop makeup and the big... Did you ever have a Nehru jacket?
No, I never did. But I did have...
Would you like to have mine? I've got it. I haven't worn it since 1968, but by God, I still have it.
But I did buy a ruffled shirt because everybody had one. Yeah. So
I have one of those you can borrow too. It's black.
In recording...
And a velvet jacket. Don't forget. Velvet jacket, yes.
This is like the parody of... Go ahead.
No, I was just going to ask, because I want to... It's London. In London, what were there a lot of recording studios? Were there... All we kind of know is Abbey Road, let's say.
There was a ton of them, yeah. And Abbey Road actually was my least favorite studio. IBC is the one I usually used, which is a great studio, and was right near the BBC. But there were lots of others. Olympic, of course, is well-known, another very good studio.
And were they comparable to L.A. or New York studios?
Yes, they were.
Right.
They were.
Now, how did you get your relationship, which I – how did you meet the Kinks and the Who? I mean,
well, two different situations entirely.
Of course,
the Kinks. I don't know if you know London at all, but Denmark Street was the street of music publishers, and in the West End and around Soho, and I was visiting one of the publishers one day when one of the Kinks managers walked in and said, anybody here like to listen to a demo? I said, I'm here, I'll listen. So I did, liked what I heard, and we kind of proceeded from there. I took them into Pi Records, and the rest, as they say, is history.
Wow. Now, at that time, was it easier, because I know, growing up in Nashville, I knew back in the 40s, 50s, and into the 60s, somebody could come in with their own record or their own demo, and they'd be welcomed in small recording studios, and they'd listen.
Yes.
Was that kind of the situation you're describing?
Yeah,
you just happened to be
absolutely.
There, and
yeah,
these,
sure.
Because nowadays you got to
forget it now.
Yeah, you forget it.
Yeah.
Don't think that going to Nashville with a guitar and getting off a bus is going to make you anything
happen.
More than a street person. The Who, was it the same situation?
No, Who came about because a girl that was working for me was friendly with one of the Who managers and through her asked if I would go see the band. And they were at that point rehearsing at a church hall. And I said, sure, okay, I'll go. And I mean, I think literally I heard eight bars and said, yes, I'll sign you. they were the best rock and roll band I'd heard since I got to England. So they were great.
And was, I think probably My Generation is the first record of theirs I heard.
No,
was that the first
thing? I Can't Explain was the first.
Can't Explain. Yeah. Okay.
God, and they're also friggin' awesome.
Wow. Just,
timeless.
I know.
Yeah.
Still.
Well, and they're still playing them.
Yeah, that's what
I mean,
I'm saying.
The Who are still playing them on tour, so.
Right.
And they're both songs that, you know, if you're on any sort of open road or expressway, you look down and you're going 40 miles an hour faster than you were when the song started playing.
Yeah. Especially.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's a good thing, you know. Because there's no open highways in LA. You can get up over 40 miles an hour. What was the London nightlife? I mean, should we picture, what was it? What was that? Austin Powers?
No, I think you got to understand the economics as well in that at that time, if you wanted to take a taxi anywhere in the London area, it cost you something in American money like 6 cents to walk into the taxi. And to get across town may cost you $1. and restaurants were appalling. Food was very bad. The record business in London at that point was very small. There were really two clubs, which are the Revolution and the Speakeasy, that were the band clubs. And by the way, all clubs were subscription. You had to join the club because
that's right.
Otherwise, that's the only, pubs had to close at 10 or 11, depends on where they were. The clubs could stay open until 3, 4 in the morning. So everybody joined clubs. And the entire English rock population were that had made any noise at all were at one of these two clubs on a nightly basis. And so a lot of them used to stand up and try out material that nobody had heard before to see what their peers would say. And so that was great too.
That's neat. That's kind of like last week we had on Dennis Olsen, who's sitting outside. It says, oh, happy birthday, Dennis. But he came on with three of his old friends from the Sunset Strip true punk rock evolution era. And that's kind of what they were saying too, is that there was like two certain clubs. There was a bunch of little things, but the two certain clubs is where everybody really broke out and that sort of thing.
Right.
Yeah. But you were getting ready to say?
I was going to ask because I'd heard that when Jimi Hendrix arrived in London, that, you know, the Who or the Beatles or people who were, you know, doing other things that night talked to one another and they said, let's go over to whatever that club was to hear this American guitar player who was in town. And and how did that kind of scene work?
Well, I'm not sure what club he was at. Do you know?
Well, I don't really know the club. I just remember when he was playing.
He certainly played at one of the two clubs I just mentioned.
Right, right. But the guys you work with in the Who would be standing around and they'd say, "Well, let's go get a drink at, or let's go hear Jimmy. He's in town."
Basically that's the way it worked. Yes,
I love that. Yeah.
Was there friendship and camaraderie between
that's
the different?
That's a good question. Yeah.
Yeah, All the bands got on very well together, and I said these are, you know, both membership clubs. The only other people that ever got in were good-looking girls, so right. Who got in for free.
That's a business model.
Right.
My sister Deb, who I told you passed away, but she was the oldest of the four of us, and she was very hip and she was very beautiful. And my parents sent her in 1971. To London for her senior class trip with a couple of her girlfriends. And I knew that she had gone up and knocked on Paul McCartney's townhouse door. Okay. But I found out my one of her friends from, you know, she was a go-go girl in a garage band, the Sound Barriers. Mm-hmm. And they had parties at my parents' home quite a bit. And he sent me this 8 millimeter color film of a party in my parents' living room in 1967, 68. And it's fabulous. The fashion, the dances, and that sort of thing. And I mean, I got to figure out a way to get it off the little Facebook thing so I can show you guys, because it is marvelous. And I make a guest appearance at the ripe age of 6, maybe. but the point of the story is that the gentleman that sent me the clip was also saying, no, she said, well, you don't understand the whole story. She said, your sister and her friend walked up and knocked on the door, and Paul McCartney answered the door. They were just dumbfounded, and he was very pleasant and kind, and they had a brief, you know, a short conversation mm-hmm. until my sister realized that John Lennon was sitting at the only on the Bob D Show. Yay! That was our mystery guest. It's a mystery to all of us. But anyway, so my sister realized that John Lennon was sitting at the piano, like kind of strumming his fingers, like, you know, let's go. And so she took out her Instamatic really quick and tried to take a picture of him. Paul McCartney was like, ah, and he slammed the door in their face. That was ballsy.
It's the only person I didn't get to meet John Lennon, but I somehow met the other three. So
no, I told you it was the same. It was 6 degrees of separation when they recorded Venus and Mars in Nashville. My father met him and Linda and the kids at very, very late at night when there was no the paparazzi wasn't there yet. Mm-hmm. And they had a conversation about where the baggage claim was. And my dad goes, I had no idea who the hell he was, you know. And then all of a sudden, like 1,000 reporters come running up.
I had such a crush on him when I was 9 years old. I had Beatle cards, you know, that you'd put puzzles together and all this stuff. And I'd go see Beatles movies, and you'd stay all day. You could stay all day and literally just watch it over and over and over again. We were just obsessed.
I remember my sister and my father having a fight at the kitchen table, having dinner like a casual night, and because my sister wanted the blue plastic cup or glass tumbler because that was Paul McCartney's favorite color. And my dad's like, oh, God, and I've had a lot of this Beatle crap and that.
I have a Shell question. When you have a session with either the Who or the Kinks or the other people that you've all also done, does the record company ask you what you think should be the next single, or do they lean on you at all to help them pick the next single?
Basically, they did not interfere. I worked with the band. And in fact, I chose the material that we were going to record, and we didn't end it the best job we thought we could do. And when it was done, I kind of, with the band, chose what we thought should be the next single and went to the company
and gave it to them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's another the Australian band, the Easy Beats.
Yeah, right.
Who you know did Friday on My Mind. Mm-hmm. That's the song.
Yeah.
With Friday on My Mind?
No, that's an entirely different story. They came to me and very nice guys, and I listened to their material and I liked some of it, and I said, I don't really hear a hit here. Can you please go away and write some more songs? And so every Friday they used to come up to the office with the songs they'd written, and I said, no, not really, until about maybe 5 or 6 weeks later. Again, it's, you know, like when I heard the Who, right in my mind, oh, that's it, we're doing that one. Hey. And it sounded like an instant hit, so unfortunately it was.
Well, go.
You produce, right? So is there an engineer you preferred working with when you were doing all this? I mean,
I had engineers I preferred because I chose the ones that I had to tell the less of stuff too, because I am an engineer. I was an engineer, so.
Well, see, that's a lot of people start as engineers. Yeah, so it's like you can see.
Well, what I also discovered early on is, in my opinion, you can't do both jobs at the same time. They're a totally different way of looking at how the things are sounding. So, I found engineers that. I didn't they knew what I wanted and got it, and I didn't have to instruct them, you know. So that was
That's great. Yeah.
What do you think? Or, you know, heard tale and the trailers of this new Bohemian Rhapsody movie about Queen.
I don't know about this.
Oh man, I don't know. Have you heard anything about it?
No,
Michelle?
I haven't. No.
The trailer looks fascinating, and the movie's called Bohemian Rhapsody.
Oh, I've heard about it. I don't know.
Yeah,
about it.
And so they just started running the. Yeah, he looks like Freddie Mercury. Mm. They just started running the trailers, and the one scene. And this is what made me think of it: is the Easy Beats coming in? Right. You know, I guess they're trying to sell the song Bohemian Rhapsody to the producer, and he's like, "It's six flipping minutes long." You know. No. So that's going to be pretty interesting. You were there around the Queen time too, right?
Yeah, I was.
Well, what did you think about their music? Were
you a great. Fan of? Fantastic. Yeah. I mean, one of the bands I wish I'd recorded.
Brilliant.
Right.
Well, you know what? We're down to like the last few minutes of the Bob Dean Show. Yeah.
Man, this flew by.
It flies by all the time. Seriously. It's a fun show. We'll come back on again sometime.
Next time you can have him talk about David Bowie, who as David Jones.
Yes.
You mentioned that briefly last time.
He was my neighbor.
Perfect. That'll be what we'll do the next time the four of us get together.
Okay. You got it.
So
I want to have one of the guys on the trip. There was his guitarist that.
You know?
Yeah.
Kathy St. George, ladies and gentlemen, who is not only a gas and has a great
She has
sense
her own
of humor.
Town in Utah. It's just an amazing thing.
No, well, there's too many Mormons. But more men.
More men. She knows so many really cool people. And as a matter of fact, my manager, Christina Scott, who was married to the bass player in Kiss, in between the makeup days.
Right.
Christina used to crash on Kathy's sofa in Manhattan back in the Studio 54 days when they were kids. Because my manager saw this picture of me and Kathy in a plug for the Bob Dean Show. Yay. And she calls up and she goes, "How the hell do you know Kathy St. George?" I'm like, "I know everybody through Kathy St. George." But how did I get to that?
We were talking about David Bowie.
Which will be the topic next time Shel Talmay and JD Hinton join us. So JD, break a leg.
Thank you.
October 20th, Songs of the Night at the Rockwood Music Hall. Yeah. My New York friends and listeners, who I know there are many, thank you. Please, there's 10 tickets left.
Please.
Or stand by the stage door. Jump up and down the screen. Right. Anything else we need to add, you guys? This is episode 56. 57.
Heard on that there's a new rehab for people that are addicted to Netflix. It is a real thing. So if you need help, just go online.
Well, thank you. Thank you all.
Could I have your Netflix password?
I can't even get it. I just figured out how to plug the damn computer into the screen thing, or Dennis did.
There you go.
I hate computers. I hate cell phones. I hate them.
Let's leave on a positive note.
Okay. Positive note
but
is
I love people behind
we will be
the
back. We have interesting people coming on throughout the rest of the month and into November. Hooray. And please, thank you very much, iHeartRadio, for picking us up. Thank you, George Norrie.
Yep.
George Norrie, the host of the number one syndicated radio show in the world, Coast to Coast AM. Listen in if you've never heard, but George Norrie is a good friend, and he has really helped us here on the Bob Dean Show. Anyway, that's it. iHeartRadio, iTunes, Stitcher, and YouTube. Please, you guys, rate and review and follow and all that good stuff. Do you have any idea what our listener thing is at this point?
Probably 8.
Yeah, we're probably up around 8,000.
No.
Well, we'll go get down to the nitty gritty of all this. But yeah, we're out of time. Love you. Thank you for listening to the Bob Dean Show.
Yay.
Thank you, Shel. Thank you, JD. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Joe. Thank you. Thanks, Zach. Thanks, Sammy. Are we done?
We're done.
Click.